south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, everybody. Today, I'll start out by saying that my voice is kind of blown out again, so I'll be speaking in softer tones, I hope. Why? Because I had pretty much a full week of blathering with consult calls and webinars and all that stuff. Who knows? Maybe if I really destroy my voice, I can sound like Angus Young and be famous. You all know who Angus Young is, don't you? Well, if you don't, look him up. I'm not telling you. Well, you know, it was inevitable. It had to happen. After a show I did about a week ago, when I just happened to throw in some of those top 10 mispronounced English words. Naturally, I got some emails from first world English teachers, giving me all kinds of grief, in a nice way, of course. And I also got emails from Latin American English teacher wannabes asking me if bilingual English speakers down here in Latin America, whose first language is Spanish and who learn their English exclusively down here in Latin America, if when speaking English, do they also screw up the pronunciation of certain words like nuclear or Chicago, etc. Well, the truth is, no matter how well a native Spanish speaker learns their English down here in Latin America, you can always tell that English was not their first language. And even those who study for years to take that TOEFL test, that's T-O-F-E-L test. Remember, I mentioned that in a past show. Anyway, that's an internationally accepted test that shows a person knows English as a foreign language. And note that many, many transnational corporations in Latin America insist that job applicants who say they are 100% bilingual take that test and prove it. And of course, colleges and universities up in the States insist foreign students pass that test too to gain entrance. That said, if you took anyone that passed that TOEFL test and had him or her write a business letter, 99% of the time, you'll be able to detect that there's something not quite right about the form and the flow of the letter. As it turns out, you really have to be a native English speaker to know all the little nuances and phrasing that go into a letter versus the spoken word. So that TOEFL test is good, and people who pass it know their English pretty well. In fact, they can be 95% proficient or more, but they never quite know it perfectly. That's why when you're down here walking around through a shopping center, let's say, you'll see the occasional sign or letters or phrasing in English, but something's not quite right. Oh, you get the meaning all right, but it's not the way you or I would have phrased it. That's because the bilingual person in the front office of that company who's responsible for that sign never lived in the U.S. Now, note that nearly all of the time, medium, small, and large corporations recruit a certain number of necessary bilingual speakers from their own local population and labor pool. In other words, native Latin speakers who learned English from an English program or school locally. So then why don't they recruit gringos like us who know English and its various subtleties and innuendos like a native? Now, that makes sense and would be the best case scenario, but you and I would never work for the kind of lame dough that they're offering. Because if you remember, even professionals down here get about a fourth to a sixth of the salary that a person working that job up in the States would get. For example, down here, you could get a job at a big corporation as a CPA, if you're bilingual, for a cool $10,000 or $12,000 a year. Sure, you could live a kind of a middle-class life down here, but I ask you, is that why all you expat wannabes and gonna-bees up there in Seattle and Cleveland, you want to come down here and work a 9-to-5 at the local Price Waterhouse division for $10,000 or $12,000 a year? Come on, I doubt it. But I digress as usual. Now, what was I talking about? Oh yeah, English teachers up in the States sending me emails in response to that show a week or so ago when I was talking about common mispronunciations of English words up in the first world. So, I got some emails. And Simone up in East St. Louis, man, that's a tough town, huh? She says, as an English teacher up here in the States, used to be 20 or 30 years ago, the most mispronounced word was regardless often pronounced irregardless by people not in the know. Then, some years later, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, the science teacher at my school said the word most mispronounced in his classes was chromosome. It's supposed to have two M's, but some people pronounce it with an M and then an N, like chromosome. But that was then, Johnny. Now, these days, unfortunately, all hell has broken loose in language, phonics, sentence structure, and pronunciation. These days, perhaps only one native-born American in 1,000 even has the word chromosome or nuclear in his vocabulary at all, whether pronounced correctly or not. And when it comes to immigrants and non-native-born Americans, it's not even in their dreams. And you know, funny thing, I remember about 10 or 15 years ago, I used to correct my students all the time when they'd see things like, I ain't got it, I ain't got none, or she's not here now, but I seen her yesterday. You know, Johnny, those things used to drive me nuts, but it's just not worth pondering anymore. Pondering, that's another word not found in any high school kid's vocabulary these days. Makes me want to cry sometimes. Why do you think I listen to shows like yours? I just have to get out of this system. So then why am I still here? Pension, of course. I gotta put in my time or I just won't have the money to leave. 2 more years, Johnny. The sad thing is, I could write a book on the dumbing down of the American student population, but unfortunately, no one would be able to read it. Not the students graduating from my high school, anyway. What I'm telling you, Johnny, is that the battle has been lost, especially up here in East St. Louis. Oh, the kids might have a chance in an expensive private school, but in a public school, forget about it. And she puts in parentheses, not forget about it, like you always say, Johnny. Then she says, I hate to admit it, but correct English, except for maybe the upper 2% of the U.S. population, is in the dumpster and has been for a long, long time. And everyone seems to like it that way. I don't hear anybody complaining about it, do you? And I'm not just picking on rock and roll or rap and hip-hop here. The usual suspects that are the easiest targets. All I'm saying is, take a walk into any U.S. government office, Social Security, unemployment, whatever, even in the administration office of my high school. And within 2 minutes of talking to a government worker or receptionist, you'll hear every English language rule broken 12 times. Shakespeare would fall on his sword. Which kind of gives me the feeling that any native-born North American who breathes and has a pulse can go down to Latin America and get a job as an English teacher in one of those helicopter schools you talk about, or, as you point out, just as a freelance private tutor, and be accepted down there as the authority on said subject. So, anyway, Johnny, 2 years more and I'm out of here. By the way, hope to sign up for your next seminar. Just about talked a friend into going with me so we can get that couple's discount. Signed, Simone. Please don't use my last name. Well, thanks for that, Simone, and yes, I may try to do a little highbrow bloviating, okay? But not today. And you're right, in many places in Latin America, especially off the Gringo Tourist Trail, you don't need an English degree or a teaching certificate or anything to get a job as an English teacher or science, history, or geography teacher, you name it, in one of those private bilingual K-12 schools. You don't even have to know any Spanish. In some cases, you just have to be a warm body, 100% homegrown gringo. And as it turns out, it's a favorite starter job for first world backpackers. But do arrive at the interview with a clean shirt and a tie. And don't forget the biodio. Now, changing gears a bit, a lot of you listeners may or may not be wondering why they're having so many protests down in Brazil. There are hundreds of thousands of people in the streets right now protesting, guess what? Surprise, surprise, corruption at the highest levels, the presidential and congressional levels. So we're talking institutionalized corruption in politics. What else is new? Well, here's what's new about it. There have really never been such organized, massive marches in Brazil before, calling for both the president and the Congress to step down. Because, you see, the press and the media really got the goods on them this time. Now, we all know there's massive corruption in all politics, and in South America, it's always been done and passively accepted. However, this time, the president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff's popularity is at the lowest level of any president ever in Brazil's history at only 13% approval. Guess even Obama's got that beat, huh? And here's what the media uncovered. Now, Brazil has a national oil company and owns all the national oil reserves. And it's been discovered irrefutably that oil refinery and infrastructure contracts handed out during the present administration were given by the president and Congress to their own friends, family, cronies, and buddies, which of course is not unusual. It happens all the time in the first and third world. But the kicker is the greed factor this time was on steroids. Those contracts were given out but overvalued by about $1 billion. That's $1,000 million, $1 billion. And all that extra dough went into the pockets of nearly all the congressmen and the president. And here's how it went. A congressman would hand out a, let's say, $20 million oil pipeline project to be built. Not a phantom or false project, a project that was absolutely necessary. However, the congressman would then hand out that contract to a family member, his buddies, or his cronies, even if his brother-in-law or friend never built a pipeline in his life. How that works is, said brother-in-law sets up an SA corporation, let's say it's called SFG Pipe Contractors, looks and sounds quite legitimate, huh? They get the $20 million contract, then they subcontract out the project to a real pipeline construction company for, let's say, $10 million. The job gets done, and the brother-in-law pockets the 10 and splits it with his congressman brother-in-law who got him the deal in the first place. The pipeline gets done, but at twice the actual competitive bid price. And note, these are inside deals. There are no competitive bids. So anyway, the big outrage in Brazil right now is not just a couple of congressmen doing the usual skimming, but nearly the entire party in control of Congress, including the president, getting caught red-handed stealing about $1 billion in public funds. So that's just to clarify things a bit. If you happen to see shots of Brazil in the media with hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, nope, it's not Carnival. There we have some very angry people demanding the heads of the Congress and the president. For example, in today's news from Brasilia, let me translate this. It says, diverse groups today demanded the destitution of President Dilma Rousseff and all of her associated party members in office and their allies. In Rio de Janeiro today, one of the largest marches in history was emblematic of an angry population that's become furious with the scandal and the corruption in the petroleum industry owned and run by the state. Enough said about that. And also the big news in Latin America is, of course, Nicaragua, where everybody, it seems, is up in arms about that proposed canal that's actually broken ground but hasn't gotten anywhere yet. Not really, and like I said in past shows, odds are it'll never fly. But there's also some big news out of Nicaragua that's not about the canal. So take note, all you listener expat wannabes and gonna-bes, if you're thinking about Nicaragua as your choice for Plan B. Now note that Nicaragua has one of the lowest minimum wages in all of Latin America. Right now it's at about $175.50 a month. Whereas in neighboring Salvador and Nicaragua, it's more like $300. And of course, in the more gringoized countries like Panama and Costa Rica, it's more like $500 or $600 a month, that is. Which is why for many, many years, there have been a steady exodus of Nicaraguans into places like Panama and Costa Rica. They can work there for cash and send some money home to Nicaragua every month. Remises. Sound familiar? And even if the Costa Ricans, for example, who hire them only pay them $300 a month, it's almost double what they would have made in Nicaragua. Of course, it's illegal in Costa Rica to have workers off the books and pay them in cash, but it's done all the time. That should sound familiar too, huh? And here's how it works. Suppose you're going to build a house or a bodega, a warehouse in Costa Rica. You'll hire a contractor and you'll come to a set price, which you'll always go over. Because, well, we are talking about Costa Rica, and that's the place where gringos are most taken advantage of. Anyway, you come to a price agreement with your contractor. And who shows up at work? About 10 guys with toolboxes and shovels and picks and drills, etc. And half of those guys, probably most of them, will be illegal Nicaraguans, making about $300 a month. And I'll be totally happy with that because in Nicaragua, they'd only be making about $175 a month. Now, your contractor, the Costa Rican contractor, always prefers to hire Nicaraguans because he does not have to pay the minimum wage, nor does he have to pay Social Security, health insurance, tax withholdings, vacation days, and other government-mandated expenses that he would have to pay for each Costa Rican employee, which works out to about 10% on top of their regular pay. And by the way, almost every Costa Rican who hires a gardener or a maintenance guy, maid or cleaning lady, hires a Nicaraguan too, illegally, of course, because they're not supposed to be in Costa Rica working, you know. But as you might already know, the border between Costa Rica and Nicaragua is infinitely porous. However, if you're a gringo in Costa Rica and you hire a maintenance guy or a cleaning lady, you better not hire a Nicaraguan, or a Costa Rican who hears about it is bound to call an 800 number and report you, and then you'll pay a big fine. So, as it turns out, it's all right for Costa Ricans to use illegal grunt work labor from Nicaragua, but for gringos, nope. We gotta hire a Costa Rican at Costa Rican wages, you see. Minimum wage there being, again, around $500 to $600 a month. So, can you see what's happening there and why Costa Rica is not a good destination at all for expats? There's 1,000 reasons why. So anyway, whether you know it or not, the minimum wage in Nicaragua is $175.50 a month. According to government economists, that only provides the average Nicaraguan family with about 39% of its basic monthly expenditures. That monthly figure for a family of four being $450 a month. Now, don't think we're talking about people living a middle-class life, first world style. We're talking about people living for that $450 a month, way below our definition of poverty. In other words, no car, no central heating, no central hot water, no health insurance, no insurance of any kind, no internet, no computer, no dryer, and probably no washer. So, as I've pointed out all along, people in the lower middle classes and middle classes making the average wage of $175 a month, in this case, in Nicaragua, the whole family has to chip in to make ends meet, and they do. That's why throughout Latin America in general, even though the minimum wage is always well below that basic basket of food and utilities, etc., families still get by because everyone chips in. Just like up in the States. Yeah, right. However, do note, when a country like Nicaragua with a very low basic minimum wage shares a border with a country like Costa Rica, whose minimum wage is triple Nicaragua's, that will always produce vast dislocations in labor, markets, immigration, and it also produces a lopsided class system. Sound familiar? That said, let's have another email. This time from P.T. Marcos. P.T. meaning perpetual tourist. Now, he sends emails usually from Mexico. And in this particular email, he complains how difficult it's getting to be doing simple banking in Mexico as a Canadian gringo. And yes, Canadians are gringos too. What you might call kinder, gentler versions of ugly Americans. So let me paraphrase this a bit. Dear Johnny, you might be interested to know that yesterday I needed to get some American dollars. So I went to a bank here in Mexico that's the same bank I use in Canada. Easy enough, you'd think, right? I am a client of the bank. Anyway, needless to say, I thought that would be a pretty good bet. I showed the teller my bank card and my passport, and he asked me to wait a few minutes while he went to get the dollars from downstairs. But when he came back to complete the transaction, the computer refused my card, even though it was from the very same bank. His excuse? He said their bank in Mexico was on a different computer system than their sister bank up in Canada. But he did have a solution. All I had to do was make a withdrawal in pesos from the bank machine, the ATM. Then he would exchange those pesos for U.S. dollars immediately. Easy enough. Sounds logical. So I went to the bank ATM machine, went through all the steps, hit all the buttons, and at the end it said, "Your card has been disabled." So in the end, I could get no American dollars. This was in spite of my being able to get pesos from most Mexican bank ATM machines without problems. So, obviously, I was a client in good standing. You think? Turns out it was my own Canadian bank that refused my card. And I'm not having much luck with my backup Canadian bank either. Don't you get the feeling that they want Canadians to stay at home? All right, Marcos, it's me again. Now, I know that there are a couple Canadian branches down in the rest of Latin America, like, for example, Scotiabank. And I've heard a number of complaints from Canadians using that bank down here in Central America. Same problems, same crap. My advice, you got to get off the damn first world grid. Quit using first world banks completely. The fact is, as long as you're a client of a bank or banks down here in Latin America, ones that do not have branches up in the first world, you'll have none of those problems. But let me get on to the rest of his email. Anyway, then he says, here's what I really want to discuss. Something interesting happened the other day, and I'd like your take on it. First, a bit of background. I've noticed that here in Mexico, the locals tend to avoid the sun, even more so than we overly health-conscious gringos who worry about skin cancer, even though people have been working and playing in the sun since the dawn of man. You think they had ye old copper tone in ancient Greece? Did Columbus use SPF 50 on his nose and Hawaiian Tropic on his bald spot? Who knows? But like you, Johnny, I digress. In the local market, you will see the Mexican locals all crowded into shady benches, leaving the sunny benches empty. Even if there is a bit of sun on the end of the bench, no one will sit there. Now, for a long time, I've been thinking these Mexicans must be as health conscious as we gringos as they sip their Coca-Cola in the shade. But recently, I was sitting in a park in the sun with a Latina friend, and after 10 minutes or so, she said, "Oh no, my skin is already getting dark. Let's go in the shade." Her skin getting darker? What's wrong with that? Could it be related to what you discussed in past shows about that certain feeling in Latin America? The darker a Latino's skin, the lower his or her social class? Is that why Mexicans want to stay out of the sun? I'd be interested in your take on this if you have a moment, because as a Canadian, I was just too kind, gentle, and polite to pursue the matter with her. Can't help it. We're born that way, eh? Okay, me again. My take on that? Absolutely right. There is a rock-solid caste system here, and the lighter you are, the more doors open for you, which is why so many Latinas tint their hair lighter. They never go darker, you know. And that's why there are at least 5 different shades of skin that Latins refer to when they're talking about a person. Let's talk about females then. A black lady, negrita. A bit lighter-skinned black lady, morena oscura. Light brown, morena. White, slightly tan, would be cancha. White, blanca. And there are even more grades of skin color in between. Now, as you know, up in the States, you're either black or you're white or you're Latino. Pretty much that's it. But here, a person's social status is instantly meted out by skin color, along with height, hair, and eye color. However, when you're talking about upper, middle, and wealthy classes, people who are generally light-skinned, I've seen for myself when they go on a sun and fun vacation, for example, Disneyland or Miami, some of them will make a little effort to get just slightly tan because that's proof that you've been on a sun and fun vacation, isn't it? Oh, and by the way, you can always tell when a Latin person is trying to impress you. Not just gringos, but fellow Latin people. And how's that work? Well, I can't tell you how many times I've encountered a Latin person someplace, at a grocery store or a party, whatever, and I said, "Well, how's it going? What's new? ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasó? ¿Or qué onda?" And the answer will be something like this. "Well, I just heard from my cousin in Miami." Or, "My brother's got a job in Miami." With an extra special emphasis on Miami. Like it was the be-all and end-all mecca of destinations. To Latins, Miami is Mecca, second only to Disneyland. Believe me, whenever they can, pretentious Latins will slip in something about some relative, no matter how distant, who's coming from, going to, or even in jail in Miami. "Oh, Johnny, didn't you know my son's in a theater group, and next month he's going to Miami." And you know, the thing is, they never go anywhere in Miami where people speak English. Does anybody speak English in Miami anymore? And you know, I've heard so many pretentious Latins giving me that Miami crap that I just want to slap them in the face, but I don't. The fact is, you're never going to divest any Latin person from the idea that Miami is the promised land. And why do you think that is? Well, When Latins become filthy rich, they always buy property or a house or a condo in Miami. And it's become their Bollywood by extension. You see, almost all big Latin American TV and cable TV networks, as well as soap opera production companies, those telenovelas, have now set up production companies and facilities in Miami. So that's where all the famous actor and actress soap opera stars go too. Of course, to us gringos, they're no talent nobodies, but down here, they're superstars. But Miami's where they end up too, because that's where they shoot a lot of these soap operas now. And probably a big reason why so few people speak English in Miami anymore. And finally, Marcos says in his email, I'm wondering about your take on the Philippines. Although technically not a Latin country, it seems to me as close to Asian Latin as you can get. They have a history of Spanish colonization, and their language is a hybrid of Spanish. The many Filipino people who I've encountered in Canada are as friendly and happy as Latins, and their accents sound Spanish when they're speaking English. You mentioned that you spent a couple of years traveling around the world before you settled in Latin America, so I'm wondering, what's your take on the Philippines compared to Latin America? As always, keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to that little e-book on learning Spanish. The more Spanish I learn, the more I realize that Spanish schools have been a liability just as much as a help. Thanks, P.T. Marcos. All right, P.T., my take on the Philippines, you're right. It's loaded with Spanish influence because it was a Spanish colony for some time. But here's the problem and why I would never recommend it for expats. They've got all the typical problems of a third world, very poor country, along with the fact, and it's a devastating fact, that about 40% of the population is Muslim. So you got Christian, Spanish, Catholic, and Muslim living in the same country, and they're always fighting it out. They're always clubbing each other, murdering each other. It's really just no place you want to be. Of course, you'll always find islands of tranquility everywhere, but just look it up on the internet for yourself and you'll see what I mean. And yes, because of that, they've got Muslim terrorists too and beheadings and all that, so although it's rarely reported in the first world news, that stuff happens there every day. That said, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd just like to remind you once again that my Expat Wisdom Seminar in July 2015 is getting underway in about 2 months. For complete info, just go to expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link, and get in on the fun and the boots on the ground action. Again, go to expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin seminar link, sign up, you won't regret it. Oh, and don't forget, you could get some very good flight deals if you book through Miami.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old style.